Many good writers call our region home. Sometimes it seems like every neighborhood contains a published author. Today we get to visit with an author and playwright and publisher who has several works in print. Molly Best Tinsley is the co-founder of Fuse Publishing in Ashland and the author of the recently released novel Things Too Big to Name. She joins us to talk about individual works and the book business generally. Thanks so much for joining us in the studio once again, and welcome to the new studio.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
So when in your life did you decide you were a writer?
Probably second grade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, early. It was pretty early that seemed like my calling. I remember writing a story. I guess it was fourth grade, actually. But in fourth grade, writing a story and getting a lot of good press for it,
mm-hmm.
and thinking that that's what I wanted to do. I then tried to write a second one in the same mode and didn't get anywhere near as much praise. So
the sophomore slump in fourth grade.
Exactly. That was sort of the reality.
So you did teach for a long time. I guess your longest single stint was at the U.S. Naval Academy.
That's right,
in Annapolis.
20
okay,
years.
So what made you decide that you'd rather write than teach?
Oh, it's kind of complicated. Lots of factors, actually. For one thing, we'd come out to visit Ashland just kind of on a whim and fallen in love with the place. My husband loves horses and rides, and I like, quote, culture. So this seemed perfect, you know, because as it was, he was boarding a horse an hour away in the Washington suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seemed like it was time to leave. I also read an article. This is actually in the book, but I did read an article about left-handed people dying younger. And at the time that I read the article, their average death was something like 68. And at the time, I was about 53. And so it just seemed as though I'd better make a move because I'm left-handed.
You are left-handed.
Yes.
Okay, that explains that. Well, it's funny you mentioned being left-handed because the next question I had here was whether you think writing fiction and nonfiction use different parts of your brain. And, of course, there's the whole issue of hemispheres reversed for left and right-handed people in some cases.
I think it depends on the nonfiction. You know, when I was writing for the Jefferson Monthly, I was writing theater criticism. And that's certainly a mix, but heavy on the left brain. I mean, you really do have to frame a logical argument. With creative nonfiction, which is something that I practiced when I was doing my memoir, Entering the Blue Stone, it's definitely a lot of right brain. A lot of right brain. You know, right brain is very visual and concrete, and fiction and emotional nonfiction has got to generate sensation, emotion, and you do that through concrete detail, pictures, scenes, dialogue. You get your boots on the ground.
Interesting. So even though it is considered the more creative pursuit, the fact is you're still basically having to do a lot of infrastructure work or basically building a framework here.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, in the sense that you're saying that you need to provide a lot of concrete detail. So, I mean, people may think about, you know, the creative literary parts as being artistic primarily, but you're saying
that is the artistry.
Yeah.
That is the artistry. I mean, it isn't just any detail. You know, you need to ground your work in concrete detail, but the detail itself has to fold into a larger structural purpose. I didn't mean to get so abstract. Because what I'm talking about is not being abstract. You can be abstract in your Jefferson Monthly articles about theater. You know, as long as you have the concrete examples, you have the abstract thesis, blah, blah, blah. But there isn't any of that when you do creative nonfiction or fiction.
So it's one thing to devote yourself full-time to writing, quite another to start a publishing house. Talk about the steps that led to the foundation of Fuse Publishing, F-U-Z-E, I should point out.
F-U-Z-E, I know. That was something I sort of got saddled with. My business partner, who likes everything done yesterday, we decided jointly that we were going to be F-U-S-E, but when she went to file whatever she had to do for a business, that name was already taken. So she just made an executive decision on the Z.
Mm-hmm.
And so an English professor, I get saddled with a misspelled word. And people, I can't figure it out. They come up to me and they say, how do you pronounce it? Is it fuzz? And I say, didn't you learn phonics? You know, when you've got a vowel after the Z, you've got a long U. But anyway, this business partner and I were old friends, and she had actually convinced me to try writing a spy thriller with her, to collaborate with her. And we did that cross-country, despite the time differences. It was kind of a challenge because she's a morning person mm-hmm. and I'm not. But anyway, we did write Satan's Chamber, and when it came time to publish it, of course, it was the middle of the recession. It mm-hmm. was 2008, I guess, and nobody was taking on new writers. So my optimistic partner just said, well, we'll start our own publishing company. And after that, there was no looking back. We brought it out, and it was actually quite a success because there were two people and only one book.
That helps.
Now we have 2.5 people and 24 books. Mm-hmm. So, and since the largest element in publishing really is marketing, you can imagine how thin you begin to feel that you are spread.
How hard is it to be in marketing and publishing these days, to think about all the places you can go? Because I noticed, for example, that Things Too Big to Name, you plugged on Twitter a bit. I mentioned this to Angela Decker, who's also been published, one of our producers. And she said, oh, yeah, I ran my Twitter feed about the time of my last chapbook and didn't do much since.
Right. Well, there really is an infinite amount you can do thanks to the internet. So you always feel as though you're behind. And that really is one of the burdens or the tribulations of this kind of work, is that you never feel that you've done enough, and there's always something more you can do. And when you wake up at 3 a.m, you start thinking about these things and you can't get back to sleep, you know, because they just, it's like, oh yeah, I've got to do that, I've got to do that. And particularly now with my new book, there is so much that I could do. I'm not really a tweeter. And mm-hmm. in fact, I do believe that our president has given that form of communication the kiss of death. I mean, it just really is not something that I would like to emulate. But there are still bloggers and Facebook pages and various things like that have to be kept up.
Molly Best Tinsley is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the recently released novel Things Too Big to Name, also the co-founder of Fuse Publishing, based in the Ashland area. She lives in the Ashland area. You can join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, if you want to take issue with Molly about things she wrote in a previous book or something, or just ask some questions of her. 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Before we talk about the book itself, I just want to talk about publishing generally a little more. Because we get the gloom and doom stories about books all the time. One of my favorite jokes, and our guests have heard this a lot, is the second book off of Gutenberg's Press was a book about the demise of the publishing industry.
Oh, yeah. Little did they know.
Right.
No, well, I actually wanted to quote a friend of mine here in town who has Exterminating Angel Press.
Uh-huh.
And
Todd Davies. Yeah.
You know Todd. Anyway, I asked her about, you know, what's your experience with a small press? And she told me about her accountant staring at the cash flow chart for her press well into it, and saying, I never would have believed it if I hadn't seen it for myself. It is literally impossible to make any money at this.
Wow. That's...
But then she would be the first one to talk about the joys of mm-hmm. publishing anyway. And I know she's bringing out a book called Mother Persia, that's the history of Iranian women. And she said, I can't afford to publish it, but I can't afford not to.
Interesting. She really wants to put the ideas out there in the world.
I love that.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, she's a great person.
So let's talk about your latest novel, Things Too Big to Name. You tweeted the plot out like this. Prof retires. 4 months later, her sanity is in question, plus a murder charge is in the air. What happened? Find out after August 23rd in my hashtag new novel, Things Too Big to Name.
Did I really do that?
Well, somebody did it in your name. Anyway.
No, I must. Nobody does anything for me, so I must have done it myself.
All right. So a professor retires. Well, that sounds familiar already, doesn't it?
Yeah. There's some of me in that book.
In fact, I understand that Things Too Big to Name was prompted in part by a late night encounter with a deer.
That is correct. Yes. We moved to a rural area for the first time in my life, and I managed to meet one rather unceremoniously at dusk on the way home. And it was a buck with a huge set of antlers. It obviously was injured, or at least it totaled my car.
Wow. So it ran into you, or you ran into it?
It ran into me. And people I've spoken to since have told me that's probably true. You know, it wasn't your fault. Well, I actually was listening to a book on CD, a John Le Carré book on CD, so I'm not absolutely sure I was fully alert. But anyway, it just smashed into me and disappeared. And the next day, there was no trace of it. There was no sign of a dead body, no vultures in the air. I managed to drive the car home, but it was pretty much finished.
Wow. And so the same incident or a similar incident then happens to the protagonist of your
novel? It does. Mm-hmm. It does, because I actually was kind of traumatized by the whole thing. I mean, the idea that I might have destroyed this creature that was larger than I was, it just bothered me. So I decided I would write about it, and that's what writers do. You know, they process stuff by writing. And then it just didn't want to end. I thought I would turn it into a short story, but it didn't want to be a short story. So I was sort of stuck with it for many years. I mean, 3-4 years.
3-4 years, okay.
So yeah, off and on, definitely. Until I began to, I had to follow my protagonist in this. And she was revealing things very slowly. And so I just would pick it up, and then I would put it down, and then it would sort of be like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go there. And then I'd put it away for a while, and then I'd pick it up again. Oh, gosh, I'm going to have to go there.
So an example, Margaret Torrens is the name of the protagonist, right. The lead character. But there are ghosts in the book, which apparently neither you believe in, nor does she.
Well, she didn't until she just started having a conversation with one after the accident, the deer accident. And yeah, that accident seems to trigger a series of disruptive events in her otherwise organized life. And that's kind of, the ghost is just one example of things too big to name. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so easy to just say, oh, I don't believe in ghosts. But then there is something going on here. And I believe her that it was going on.
So what was that like to get in? I mean, ultimately, she ends up, there's some issues with mental health and commitment and things like that.
Right.
So what's it like to get into the brain of a person who is struggling to understand what her own brain is doing?
Well, I think that's very familiar to me, actually. And I think things like sanity and insanity are, again, things too big to name. I think those words don't do them justice. And actually, Margaret is very comfortable living in between those two places, and I understand that. You know, the pleasure of living in a place that's in between, a liminal space, and that's kind of where she is in the book, and then life thrusts her into some really dark stuff by the end. That's where I didn't want to go, but then I finally decided, okay, I'm going to go there.
So you're essentially following along with where the writing goes, where your character takes you. I mean, are there any things in this situation or in your other works that you impose upon? I mean, do you decide, I want the ending to be this or something?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. My experience with the spy thrillers, I wrote two of them, and it was fun. But there was a certain amount of feeling like the ceiling was a little bit lower because I just didn't have the same. I was focused on a goal. I sort of knew how it had to end, and knew that it would end in kind of a shootout, showdown type of scene. Bad guys and good guys, you know, that sort of thing. The interesting thing about this book is I didn't know who the bad guys were until the very end. I kept going back and forth. Oh, I see. Okay, and then, you know, I couldn't make up my mind. I mean, I wasn't getting clear evidence one way or the other.
So coming to those revelations close to the end, did that require some rewriting of the beginning?
Oh, yeah. Lots of rewriting, lots of looping back, because each time Margaret would kind of unfurl a new discovery, I'd have to go back and write it into the beginning and make sure there was enough evidence of it there, you know, hints and so on.
Molly Bess Tinsley is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the recently released novel Things Too Big to Name, and she's the co-founder of Fuse Publishing in Ashland. Terry in Springfield dropped off a comment. We were talking about right and left brain. He says, he suggests the master and his emissary in the theory of a Scottish psychiatrist. Oh, Ian McGilchrist is the name, where the right brain is master and the left is the emissary. Permanent Reference of Social Brain Hemispheres, author also on YouTube. Okay, didn't understand the rest of that, but Ian McGilchrist, evidently. Master
okay.
and Emissary.
Interesting.
Brain
yeah.
Hemispheres, good to know.
I'm a great fan of that whole idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you describe the braiding of, it's an interesting term, braiding mm-hmm. of stories in Margaret Torrens' head in this novel.
Yeah.
What does that mean, braiding?
It means what you have here is kind of what you'd call a broken narrative. And there are actually three stories going on, even though Margaret is the source of all three of them. They are in different time frames, and they're completely different stories, and they're being told for a different audience, so there is a different voice. And one of the stories is the immediate present. She's locked up. She's going back and forth from a cell to this room where the shrink is interviewing her and trying to assess her sanity. And that story is one where she has to kind of keep her spirits up. The other story is in the immediate past, which is what he's trying to get out of her, what actually happened. And that's a week in the past. And she's writing that for him, but she's writing it very carefully because she has to control that narrative. And then the third story happens way back when she was first married. She's 65 or so. So this was 30 years ago, and she lost her husband to cancer after only 6 or 7 years. And she's got secrets about that she has not dealt with.
How did you consult mental health professionals or do some research on any of that?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I've enough to find out that in the state of Oregon, they're called qualified mental health professionals, QMHPs. But, you know, I've had a lot of therapy myself, and I've read lots of psychology. I mean, it was sort of a hobby of mine for many, many years.
How do you prime the pump on your writing? I mean, you don't drive down rural roads in the dark, I hope.
No. Although I do get some of my best ideas on I-5 when I can't write them down.
Ah, okay.
That always happens.
Do you have the handheld?
No,
you
get the I just try to come up with a mnemonic device mm-hmm. that will help me remember what this brilliant thought was by the time I get home.
All right, just a couple seconds left here. So the big question, of course, at the end, I mean, how do you feel about the future of reading? I mean, you're having some struggles with your publishing house, but
yeah.
I mean, how do you feel about people reading books generally?
That is a good question. I mean, the question is people reading books, and then what books are they reading? Because so many books that come out of mainstream publishing now are more commodities than they are really what I would call literature. Hmm. So I'd rather not, you know, go into that because it's a complicated question and I'm not sure I feel that positive about it.
I get the sense, though, that people like you feel a need to write anyway.
Yeah.
So whether people are reading, there's always going to be
exactly.
a need to
write. Exactly. There has to be a need to write, and therefore there have to be these small presses that can't possibly make money but are at least paying attention to good stories.
Fuse Publishing, co-founded by Molly Best Tinsley, her latest novel called Things Too Big to Name. Thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, thanks for having me.